Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. If I say the name Salman Rushdie, what enters your mind? Well, if you're like me, you immediately think, man on the run. This British Indian novelist and essayist found himself the center of a major controversy in the late 80s concerning one of his novels. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is with us today to bring us up to date on Sir Rushdie and talk about what happens when faith is offended. Lincoln, what do we need to know?
Well, you gave a cue, but we need to put this in its context. It's almost ancient history now, but the furor over the Satanic Verses, one of his novels, Salman Rushdie's novels, began in the late 1980s. In fact, it really began in 1989 with the news that Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran, the religious dictator of that state in the aftermath of the fall of the Shah of Iran, and then they turned to fundamentalist Islam, that Ayatollah issued a fatwa of death sentence against Salman Rushdie. And to that point, I can't say that very many people outside limited literary circles had even heard of Salman Rushdie. I know I hadn't, but I also know that after I heard the news of that, I went to the newsstand and I read some of the book and it didn't appeal to me very much. And it was a hard book to get a grip on because it didn't appear to be dealing with the things that you would think would offend that part of the world, because it really was the story of two Indians heading to England and their attempts to join that society. But he used them as symbolic figures for the attempt of people from the third world, and in this case Islamic background, to meld into the West. And one of them went one way and one went the other. One of them basically lost his mind. And in this deranged state of mind, he imagines all sorts of fantastic secular and religious imagery. And that's what got Rushdie into trouble, because by telling the ravings of a lunatic, he gave a garbled version of Islam. Some recent commentators have pointed out it became more offensive to the Islamic world, because that's the issue underlying this book story, is what precisely the whole Islamic world is having difficulties with. How do you come to grips with the West in a religion that we, looking their way, see as not just doctrinally different, because it is, but culturally it seems steeped in a medieval era. It hasn't escaped from the past. And so Rushdie lampooned it in a way that they found very offensive. But I think it was sharp because, yes, indeed, they are trying to reshape it. In another program, we mentioned the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's worth remembering in this program that the founder of it, Qutub, intellectual, one-time literary critic, had also dealt with this same question. And his solution, which he did very logically and from a political aspiration point of view, he decided that Islam not just needed to deal with the past, but ironically, it needed to strip away all of the impedimenta that it had taken along through the annals of history. So he saw it as the religion of tomorrow. But to accomplish that, he was wanting to make it from the religion of the past, the purest past, when Muhammad was ruling in, was it Mecca or Medina, but when he ruled as a little local chieftain, in essence, and supposedly exemplified the pure symbols of Islam. So in a perverse way, Rushdie's critique that Islam has taken on some bizarre add-ons is not so different from what the Muslim Brotherhood had already determined, but their solutions are radically different. And so, you know, in the West, we think that there was just maligning of Islam, but it bothered them the most because it was getting close to the truth.
Sometimes the truth hurts.
Yeah. Now, I must say that there were two other things that Rushdie does that most people don't realize, and one of them is just out there. And I myself didn't realize this till recently. He uses a word for Muhammad. He calls him Mahound. Most people thought, well, it's just sort of caricaturing. But that actually was a word used in the Middle Ages to link Islam with hell, like the hound of hell.
The hound of hell, yes.
And, of course, remember, there's a dog implication, and in Islam, you shouldn't call anyone, no human and certainly no religious figure, a dog. And I think that's reasonable.
Yes.
So, you know, he was playing with great denigration of religion. And, of course, still today, after Salman Rushdie escaped the fatwa and has now come out publicly again, the world as a whole is still debating seriously this issue of religious vilification. The United Nations deals with it periodically. There are proposals put forward to limit any criticism of another religion, which, of course, will not be good for missionary activities in particular. And they're very subjective. You know, who determines what's offensive?
Yes.
You might not even mean to give offense, and someone may take extreme offense and even require your life. So we need to have a rational approach on this.
You know, even as you tell me about this story here, about the Muslim Brotherhood who are trying to clean up their past enough to make a brighter future, this sounds familiar to me. Isn't there another rather large religious organization in this world doing the very same thing or trying to do the very same thing? They're apologizing for their past and they're trying to build a better, brighter future. Am I wrong here?
Yes.
Good.
And we need to have some programs on that. Nothing wrong with apologizing with the sins of the past, as the Catholic Church apparently did.
Yes.
Unfortunately, when I read the documents that came from, I don't think they're really apologizing for what lay behind those actions. They're just embarrassed that they are bad press.
Mm.
Yes, we need to realize that many religions have acted out of concert even with their own founding principles. As that document from the Roman Catholic pointed out, sometimes sinful, vindictive individuals associated with an organization do things that even the organization will not be happy
well,
with.
Yeah.
And we all know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But more and more, I think, with Islam, we see that certain patterns of behavior do seem to derive directly from a commonly held assumption on their religion, and that is very, very problematic.
And the past is so important to these religions that they can't seem to let go of them. I mean, we're talking crusades here. People are doing things today because of what happened in the crusades. It would seem to me, when they are attacking, when they are saying what they are and what they believe, they're thinking back of what happened to them generations and centuries and millennia ago. That's all part of the package.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the crusades, we don't want to get too one-sided on that. The crusades were very unfortunate. There was some aggravation on both sides, and as far as the formal crusades beginning, that was instigated by the Council of Clermont.
Mm-hmm.
The Pope gave a great warlike speech and said, it's the will of God, you go off and kill these people that are profaning the sacred places.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's no wonder that there's some ancestral memory. But it's two-sided now. There's no question. It might be a little bit more than unfortunate terminology. George Bush, on the outset of Gulf War II, even said crusade.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a crusade against terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no wonder that, and you know, what does crusade mean? War of the Cross.
Yes.
So we need to, all of us, steer clear of religious conflict or religious warfare. We need to fight the war of the spirit, which, as some apologists for Islam have tried to say, on jihad is just an internal spiritual struggle. I think they're only half right on that. But all of us can realize that religion is very much for the individual and for self-determination of spiritual identity, and we can't impose that on someone else.
Has Salman Rushdie made any kind of concessions? I mean, has he backed down on anything? Has he said, whoops, I shouldn't have done that, or I did that wrong?
Not really.
Really?
Okay. I think he's sorry that it all happened.
Yeah.
But no, he's not. And he knows very well. You know, remember, he's from India and was exposed to Islamic communities there.
Yeah.
He knows that's not going to save him now.
Yes.
There's no apology out of the fatwa and what he did against Islam. You know, they've taken great offense. But we all need to be careful, not just with Islam, but with any other religion. We shouldn't gratuitously try to insult them or demean them. or even trivialize another religion. And we need to be confident about our own faith, confident enough to speak of it in a way that perhaps someone that holds a contrary view will find a challenge to their held view. But that's what conversion's about. You're not going to convince someone to any other viewpoint, particularly on as deeply held one, as spiritual one, unless you shake them with the contrary viewpoint. But we shouldn't be vilifying them. We shouldn't be demeaning the other individual. And it should never be necessary to cast aspersions on their gods or faith system, in the sense that, you know, I don't want to get into it, but, you know, giving some animal application to your god or whatever. I mean, that is just bad. But obviously, if you're dealing with the one true God, say, and you say his Baal, no one will get offended by it. We don't have too many Baal followers. You know, as the Bible said, you know, Baal, he's just a god of wood and stone and stuff. He's got no power. Well, that sort of statement is offensive to a Baal believer, but it's not inherently insulting, even though someone may, worshipping Baal, feel that their god has been diminished. That's the byproduct of witnessing for another god.
Yes, it is.
And there's a fine line, as an article I read recently pointed out, between reasonable statements and something that is insulting of a religion. You can't just go on the intent of the heart. Someone speaking guilelessly can say some rather grotesque things. But you can't allow the recipient to determine it totally either. And that's more and more what's been happening, even on the international stage in the United Nations. Countries trying to put laws in that says anything that they find objectionable stated about their religion is going to be now criminalized. Well, you know, we can't do that. But we can call for more cultured statements about anyone's faith and indeed their integrity as human beings. You know, if you believe something foolish and you've considered it, fine. It's not for me to say, you know, you're dumb, you're ignorant, you know, how dare you or whatever. No, I say, well, I respect that. Here's another viewpoint.
It all comes down to love. It all comes down to loving the people that we don't agree with. It all comes down to loving the nations, the individuals, the religions. If we love people, we say things differently. We express them differently. There is a different standard by which we speak if there is love in our hearts for the people we're speaking to. Am I on the right track?
Absolutely, and respect. We need to respect other people.
Absolutely.
And we need to, as it says about Jesus, he went around someone who desired their good. I don't desire the world to be full of Islam or Buddhism or whatever, but I do desire all people to come to a comfortable, clear, and satisfying understanding of the higher powers in the universe.
Amen. Wow, very good. Our time has flown by. www.libertymagazine.org is our address, libertymagazine.org. Lincoln, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And until next time, listener, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.